listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron. Wayne's going to be out this week, and we have a special guest with us. No, it's not Halloween. This is how this man dresses now. We have Matt Frazier with us, formerly of the Tulsa Police Department, and the show First 48. So, and you know, we're going to talk about what Matt's doing now. Obviously, got us excited there, just out of surgery. So we'll figure that out here in a second. So welcome to the show, Matt. Appreciate you coming on, man.
No, thanks for having me. I apologize for the delay. Literally straight from the OR, so I apologize.
Okay, no worries, man. We're all working folks here on these shows. So, great. I'm glad you decided to come on the show. I know a lot of people that are fans of the First 48, you know, still have some fandom and fan base. And, you know, obviously you're no longer on that show. And, you know, a lot of people like myself, you know, took the time to kind of figure out the next industry you transition to. And we'll talk about that in a minute. I guess, you know, let's kind of go from the beginning if we could. I know you went to Oral Roberts University, but kind of talk about those days and how you got into police work from there.
Yeah, sure. No, I played basketball in high school, was fortunate enough to get a scholarship to play at Oral Roberts and played off and on, you know, for 4 years there. You know, and I used to talk to one of our security guards who was an off-duty TPD guy. His name was Paul Ura. And Paul used to, you know, just kind of talk about the job and what he did. And it sounded interesting, of course. And, you know, you saw all the other TV shows and, you know, the chasing bad guys and all that kind of stuff. And obviously that appealed to me. You know, I got my degree in exercise science. So I was actually a strength conditioning coach with the Colorado Rockies for a few years before I was a policeman. And, you know, I met my wife in 2000, summer of 2003. And, you know, we decided we were going to get married, start a family. It's time to find a real job. So, you know, I had looked into the fitness industry, and, you know, had a couple of job offers there. And then also with the Tulsa Police Department had applied, gone through the application process and the testing process, was accepted and was offered a pre-hire position. And, you know, my wife said, you know, we looked at the options there and she said, you should probably go be a policeman.
Now, can you share what the other option was? That was kind of funny.
Yeah, no, it was, so it was with Curves, you know, kind of a regional gym membership sales manager with Curves, the women's, chain right. Gym there. So it, my wife, no, knew me better than anybody else and said, you should probably go be a policeman if we're going to stay married.
There you go. Absolutely. So that kind of helped with that decision making process. So once you got, once you got into the Tulsa Police Department and before you got into the detective type bureau, you had a lot of different assignments. Kind of share with our folks, the different assignments that you had leading up to homicide.
Sure. Yeah, no, I got cut loose after, you know, it's kind of rigorous, you know, it's 22 weeks of academy or 26 weeks, sorry, of the academy. And then it's another 14 weeks of field training before you're cut loose. So it's about a year of training worth of training that we got, with the Tulsa Police Department within the department. And then, you know, I got cut loose Midnight's, Northside David Squad. And, you know, I fell in love with kind of, you know, just, you know, chasing narcotics and gang members and kind of gang culture and talking to those kids and doing those kinds of things. And, you know, enjoyed the heck out of it and started to kind of make a career out of it, really. I transitioned from the street into narcotics and gangs, which was great. It was fun. Did a lot of undercover work, you know, got a lot of life experience, as I say. And then moved on once that lifestyle kind of wears on you a little bit, you know. I think it was 6 or 7 years, moved into detective division where I was a part of the robbery unit, where we investigated, you know, commercial robberies, bank robberies, robberies to individuals, things of that nature. And that was a fun, that was such a fun squad. It was a blast. You know, had victims that were alive, of course, you know, and I'm also bad guys still, you know. And so, you know, that squad was a lot of fun. That job was a lot of fun. Natural transition was into homicide to follow. So, year and a half later, I followed Justin Ritter, into the homicide unit where we were kind of partners throughout our entire police career. You know, he worked third shift in Charlie Squad, which was just adjacent to my area. And then he went into street crime. So did I. And then we went into narcotics together and then robbery to follow that. And then homicide to follow that. So we've taken the same path. And, you know, I went to one place first, he went to another place first, he got into homicide before I did. And then I followed him there. And that was kind of the story. So, it's pretty cool. Justin's a special guy. So we spent the almost 12 years of my police career pretty much with Justin.
Okay. So do you think that, like you said, making that transition out of robbery or whatever, like you had kind of, I don't want to say mastered it, but like it was just time to get the next experience, or, you know, how did that work?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think a couple things. I'm pretty competitive in nature, number one. You know, you want to be the best. And the kind of the next natural progression to be the best was going to be to get to homicide, right? That's where the cream of the crop lives. So, you know, we that was the spot I wanted to get to. I actually got I got denied. Justin beat me out of the first spot, and then Ronnie beat me out of another. And then I got in the third try. So, and then once I stayed there, it was just kind of, you know, like I said, best of the best.
Okay. That's awesome. Now, was Jason already there when you were there? Jason White?
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Jason was already there. Dave Walker was there. Dave Walker. John Brown, Mike Zanoni, okay. All those guys. Yeah. We're still there.
That's great. So, okay. So that makes a lot of sense. So that's where the cream, you know, the creme de la creme or whatever is. You want to, you know, make sure you've done kind of, you know, all, have the full career. I guess that went with the promotion as well, right? The rank, your rank went up once you went into homicide.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was a great spot for me to get to. The next natural progression, you know, and I think that, you know, a lot of guys that jump into detective division, you know, that's where they want to end up, right? I mean, you don't really get much higher than that. And the only way I think out of there is either to transition to another career, or you end up promoting, kind of like Justin did, to a lieutenant or to a captain or a sergeant position into another unit, and then make it back as a supervisor.
Okay. Good enough. So, well, it sounds like, you know, you had a lot of good experiences. And so I guess talk about the qualities that you, because you've been through all these things, what qualities did you have and that you've learned that have made you a success in your current career?
Yeah. So I think that being able to, you know, all the interviews that we did, all of the investigations we completed, you know, you know, being able to walk into a bar and talk a complete stranger into committing a felony with me, you know, seriously, right? Like that was my sales experience. And now, you know, I don't look at my new career as a sales career in medical device in the OR as a surgery consultant to trauma surgeons, orthopedic trauma surgeons, but, you know, you carry a lot of the same, you know, kind of the same skills that you learn as a policeman, as an investigator, especially a homicide investigator and an undercover detective, you know, narcotics detective, you know, you learn how to talk to anyone. You learn how to develop relationships with people, with informants, with witnesses, with other detectives, other agencies, the DA's office, you know, in order to kind of work to a common goal. And it's very similar here where, you know, we as surgical consultants, sales, you know, med device salesmen, you know, we develop relationships with our customers. We live life with our customers. You know, they trust us to be able to help them make decisions, you know, in the best interest of a patient, right? And it goes beyond, you know, the what's it going to do to get you into this forward today. You know, it's more of a, you know, you're a part of the team, you're a part of the surgical team, you know, you're assisting or advising, and, you know, decisions based upon, you know, the implants that we carry or that we're experts in, right? And so, you know, being able to develop those early on is very much so like building rapport, you know, in an interview with a homicide suspect or, exactly. you know, that and those kinds of things, and being able to take those skills, which are, I think, are a pretty special set of skills that not a whole lot of people possess, into this kind of civilian world, you know, has done, you know, it's done pretty well for me.
Exactly. You know, I'm just kind of randomly thinking that it's almost like a reflexive property. I remember that Jason White was a surgical tech before he remember that.
So yeah, he's a heart scrub.
Yeah. So kind of interesting there. I find that fascinating. Okay. So let's go back a little bit. You know, you and I talked about, we had a little pre-meeting, you know, yesterday. I appreciate that. But you and I'm retired, you know, law enforcement, different type of career, obviously. But there's a lot of people that are in, let's say, a law enforcement career, and they're a quarter way through. I'm just throwing that number. You know what I mean? They got several years in or whatever. They feel trapped. Man, they're just doing it for the benefits. Maybe they're staying in there and maybe they could be doing something that was more true to themselves. Kind of talk about maybe that as it compares to the decision you came to when it was time for you to roll out and do what you're doing now.
Yeah, no, it's obviously was a tough decision, right? Leaving the police department and moving on. But, you know, for me, it was time, you know. That job is difficult. There's a lot of things that kind of go into that'll start to wear on you for sure. A lot of people don't like to admit that, but, you know, telling people their family members are dead on a daily basis, you know, talking to those kind of people and seeing the things we saw for a long period of time. You know, for me, it was time to leave. Right. And knowing what I was going to do next was not, you know, in my head, my brain didn't really know what it was going to be, but, you know, this opportunity kind of fell in my lap and I made the most of it. And, you know, I think that a lot of people stay into this, or get into this mindset, or stay into this groove of, you know, I've got to stick it out for 20 years, right? I've got to get the pension, I've got to get my benefits, I've got to do all these things. Well, you know, for me, I looked in the mirror and said, you know, do I want to be miserable? Because when you start to do the math, at my age, you know, I started the police department at 23 years old. You know, I would have to get to at least 30, 35 years to get to a point that I would have been comfortable retiring, being able to help support my kids through college and those kinds of things. And, you know, to me, I don't know that I had another 20, 25 years left in me in order to be able to do that. And, you know, kind of made the decision. You know, I had an opportunity, jumped into the deep end head first, and, it's not been the easiest road by any means. However, it is offered and provided, you know, my family more than the police department ever could. The company I work for is a great company, and they support law enforcement, first responders, veterans, former military. They've got a lot of programs, you know, that support those, that support those individuals that are willing to make a jump. So, you know, we were very fortunate too, as I was kind of on the front end of these things, to, you know, kind of start a real effort to hire former policemen, former firefighters, former paramedics, with Stryker.
Towards the end. I want to save that toward the end. You're right. I want to, when you give out your contact information, talk, you know, we'll talk about that toward the end. For sure. But okay, that, you know, that makes a lot of sense. Everybody's experiences are different. You know, I think the thing, man, is that you had kind of checked every box. You know, I think about that, like, man, he'd done robbery and homicide and selling undercover and, you know, probably your fair share of knocking down. I mean, were you on the fugitive warrant thing, or did you do some knocking down?
No, I never did. I never did fugitive warrants. I did apply. They went with somebody else, which was great because I never would have ended up in homicide. But, you know, the fugitive warrant task force was something that was interesting to me as well. Got a lot of friends that are marshals, and then in robbery and homicide, we work really close with those guys on a daily basis. So that was one thing I kind of wanted to do that I never really got to do. But yeah, I mean, I checked all the boxes, right? Like I think I worked everywhere I wanted to work. I did everything I wanted to do. And it kind of got to a point in my life where it's like, well, what's next? Do I want to promote, go work midnights on the beat? Do I want to stick it out in homicide for another 20 years? You know, just kind of a difficult spot to be in.
What was it like being on the TV show and even though it sounds glamorous to people like you and I, oh my God, you know, you're on the show, you got some notoriety or a lot of notoriety or whatever. Was that difficult for you with Tulsa being kind of a, you know, America's town? And was it hard for you to grocery shop and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the show does such a great job and has been on for so long that, it's got a pretty large following. A lot of people watch the show, and, you know, being in Tulsa, getting out and about, especially when it first started to air, was, you know, yeah, I mean, it was hard to go anywhere really without somebody saying hi or recognizing, you know, wanting a picture or an autograph or whatever else, which was kind of strange to me. I can't say that I liked it all that much, to be honest. But you know, it was interesting and it was kind of fun at first. And then, I love that people watch the show. You know, it's really cool to think that I made a difference, you know, whether it's in somebody's Thursday night or, you know, in a victim's family, like either way, that part was pretty cool. You know, I think, a lot of the people around us, our family members and friends, liked it or enjoyed it a little more than we did probably, but, sure. If you said you don't like that part, that side of it, you'd probably be lying, you know?
Right.
But some of it can get a little old, you know? And, as I kind of transitioned into my new career, it's kind of funny though, you know, I kind of grew my hair out, wore a beard. People quit recognizing me, which is kind of nice. Just kind of put my head down and went to work like everybody else. And every now and then, you know, you'd get to somebody would recognize me or whatever and want to take a picture, and people were confused and, you know, customers and whatnot. And now it's, now we're far enough out and everybody kind of knows, you know, it's kind of easy peasy.
All right, man. Well, we're getting some responses here from viewers, our live audience, man, getting some good responses here. A lot of thumbs up. Hey, man, how did you land on the bow tie, man? How did that happen?
Yeah, so it's funny. A lot of people kind of give me a hard time and think I did it just for the television. And actually, my kids gave it to me for Father's Day the year I was going into detective division. And they ended up – I ended up wearing it one day, obviously, because my kids gave it to me. And everybody kind of gave me a hard time, made fun of me and whatnot. And I said kind of, you know, well, you know, I'm going to wear it every day. You know, if you guys don't like this – you know, my dad had a great saying of you can get glad in the same pants you get mad in. And that was kind of how I approached it. So that's where the bow tie was born. And then it just kind of continued on. And then, unfortunately, it kind of stuck, or fortunately, either way you look at it. And, you know, we just kind of continued it on.
Well, that's awesome, man. And it really was. I'm as a fan, which is kind of how we got here in the first place, is we're my family and we're just super fans and stuff like that. So, you know, it's a real fun differentiator. You know what I mean? You're driving the car, you know, chasing the guy down in the bow tie. It's not an oxymoron, yeah, but it kind of is. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah, dude. It's an interrogation room and stuff like that. You know, it's just a lot of fun and a lot, like I said, just a real fun differentiator. Well, now moving forward to today, man, I mean, even today, I mean, I, when you said, hey, I'm in surgery. And I'm like, what? You know what I mean? And so go ahead and tell our, this is great, man. You kind of right there from ground zero, man, at the hospital.
Yeah.
So what do you do? So you sit in there, your company provides the screws and whatever, right, for certain types of surgeries. Right. And you're the guy in the room that's a consultant to the surgeon.
Yeah, yes. It's, you know, people ask me what I do now, and it's kind of funny because I ask them if they've got about an hour and a half so I can explain it. But it's, you know, the short of it is, I work for a company, Stryker Orthopedics, work in orthopedic trauma as a sales consultant. Essentially, we provide implants to help surgeons fix broken bones. Right, that's kind of the easiest way to put it. You know, we spend our lives on call, just like I did for 12 years as a policeman. And, you know, you kind of live and die by the phone. And unfortunately, I still, I still see people on probably their worst day. But on this side of things, I get to play a little hand in helping them get better, which is great. And I mean, that's kind of the long and short of it. You know,
I'll go into a little bit more detail. Like, is it primarily, you said, cause I was, you know, my wife just got through with some back surgery and some other surgeries. Like, no, we don't do spinal stuff. So you guys do like hips and knees or what's the.
Yeah, essentially we do. So we cover everything from kind of the midline out. Right. So we do, shoulder to fingertips essentially and hips to toes, nails, screws, plates, arthroplasty. I mean, you name it. We've got it. So.
Okay. And so how long were you in the Stryker Academy before they let you?
it's kind of a funny story. But when I first started this, I walked into a territory that apparently wasn't doing well. Didn't know that. And, I started my first day and the two partners I had quit about a week and a half after. So my Stryker Academy was pretty immediate.
Oh, wow.
When I started jumping in the OR and trying to figure it out on my own. And then, you know, theirs is pretty rigorous. It's 12 weeks, 12 weeks of class, 85 is passing. They expect 100%, but 85 is passing. It's a lot of anatomy. It's a lot of physiology. It's a lot of looking at x-rays, looking at CT scans, looking at injuries, you know, trying to decide what we're going to bring to fix it. Knowing orthopedic trauma principles, you know, as taught by and to surgeons, and things of that nature. And just, you know, it's crazy. You got to wear a lot of hats in the OR. You gotta be able to think on your feet. Like I said, you gotta be able to solve a lot of problems at the drop of a hat. Cause you never know what can go wrong in trauma surgery. Right. And you really gotta be able to be an asset in the OR, whether it's, you know, solving problems or something's not just working, you know, and, knowing what the outcome needs to be and then trying to make a roadmap to get there and then have plans, you know, C, D, E, and F.
So is a lot of your work in the early morning when they do surgeries, or is it all, you know what I mean?
So,
I guess the critical part probably is in the morning, right?
Yeah. So you caught me on a day where I was called in about 2 a.m. For a girl, an unfortunate young lady that was struck by a semi truck.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Had a lot of extremity injuries, and had some vascular injuries as well, which is why she went to the OR, you know, in the middle of the night. And that, you know, that surgery took about 3 or 4 hours. So, you know, I rolled right into my normal day at 5 a.m. Surgery starts at 7, and then we get done when we get done. Some days it's, you know, 3 p.m. Some days it's 9 p.m. It just kind of depends upon what comes in. You know, not every day is different. Not one surgery is the same. And so you just kind of, it just kind of comes and goes. Nothing scheduled, obviously. It's all orthopedic trauma.
Is the orthopedic field, I mean, I don't name any names, but are there, you know, I know Stryker's a big name. I know they have to do equipment and some other stuff. I'm kind of, they've been in business a long time. Are there a lot of other competitors in the orthopedic space, or it's like maybe y'all and one or two other companies? Like,
Yeah, no, there are definitely, you know, quite a few competitors. I think the big names, you know, there's two or three other, you know, big, med device companies that we compete with, but you know, there's also a bunch of those smaller companies that, you know, are designed by or engineered by surgeons, right? They, you know, have their own ideas on implants or devices, and, you know, they get some financial backing, and they, you know, and then it kind of grows from there. And there's been some great ideas and great devices that have been purchased by bigger companies that are thought by smaller, you know, smaller companies. And that's kind of how the world works.
Sure. So how many years have you been in the surgery Stryker
area? I'm going on 8 years. I'm going on 8 years now.
And is this a field that you feel like you could take that to the distance, or is this going to be something that maybe like, hey, I'm seeing a lot of trauma again, or it's a different kind of trauma?
Yeah, no, it's a different kind of trauma. This is something I will finish my, you know, I'll retire from. You know, this kind of trauma is a little different because, you know, it's a little more dehumanized, right? They're just a leg under a drape, right? And you don't have as much patient interaction, but you do know that you're playing a part in their recovery, you know, and trying to get them back to as normal as possible. So, you know, that being said, this is a, you know, it provides you an avenue to not only be able to, you know, kind of set your own financial path for you and your family, but also to be able to still help folks, you know, in kind of a third party way, standoffish way, but still be there in the background and know that what you're doing is helping people. So, you know, that being said, this is a much easier road to retirement, I'd say, than being a homicide detective.
Sure. But yet it still involves some of the same skills, and you're there in the OR, and there's a kind of a critical, pretty much mission critical thing. I would assume, you know, in surgery and getting it done and those things. So I think
absolutely.
That's a real good way to share the skill set. I was going to ask you something else. We got about like 7 or 8 minutes. I guess go ahead and talk about, okay, so like you said, you guys were recruiting. You always take a look at people that are first responders, law enforcement.
Sure.
Kind of talk a little bit about that as we kind of wind down.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, Stryker, greatest company, you know, in med device, in my opinion. It's the only one I've worked for. However, I do get, you know, people try to poach me quite a bit. I talk to a lot of other med tech companies, med device companies, you know, from benefits to culture to, you know, upper management to day to day. And, you know, Stryker prides itself on being a salesman's paradise, you know. The company is the only place that gave me a shot as a, you know, as a guy with no sales experience and you know, no real experience in med device or anything. And you know, fortunately, I was lucky enough to be pretty good at it. And I think that I applied a lot of the skills that I had learned as a policeman, as an investigator, to what we do now. And it's really paid off. And I think that Stryker saw the value in that, right? And we started a big initiative on hiring first responders, paramedics, firemen, policemen, veterans, former military guys, because they all share a little bit of the same, you know, skill sets. You know, not everybody's the same, obviously, but, you know, they definitely share a lot of the same skills and that are applicable to med device sales or being an OR consultant. And I think those skills are not had by normal everyday Joes, right? You know, the Stryker typically looks for, you know, former athletes or competitive people or people with sales experience and things of that nature. And I think that they kind of unlocked something, you know, with me. And since me, they've hired at least 20 that I know of, former policemen. I talk to guys all over the country. You know, their managers, hiring managers, recruiters, I'll give them my number. They have it. They can call me anytime. They can ask the questions, the transition, the retirement, you know, all the ups and downs I went through before, you know, I got my feet set and everything. And, you know, if anybody was thinking about getting out or anybody wanted to talk to anybody, within Stryker, they can feel free to reach out to me. you know, email is probably the best, but it's Matthew, M-A-T-T-H-E-W, dot Frazier, F-R-A-Z-I-E-R, at Stryker. It's spelled S-T-R-Y as in young, K-E-R.com. Man, shoot me an email. I'd love to talk about the opportunities. You know, the recruiters definitely want to talk, because I think they've kind of unlocked that value that other companies probably have not so far, and they're winning. You know, you look at their stock price, you look at their growth and their valuation, and right, it soars every year, every quarter. So they're doing something right.
Oh, good to know. And also, your LinkedIn seems like it's a pretty open platform too, so folks could reach you on LinkedIn as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn, you know, at Matt Frazier, right? Shoot me a message. That's how Bruce and I kind of got together to begin with. So
You'll answer your LinkedIn.
I will. Yeah, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, you know, we kind of got for the show. I'm definitely not as active on that kind of stuff, but LinkedIn for sure.
No, man. So, hey, Matt, thanks for, you know, coming on the show today. And yeah, we got it all in. I think we covered all the points. And
cool.
And, man, you just certainly been a role model and an influencer, I guess, to borrow. But, yeah, you know, in a very positive way, man. So it's just, you know, I mean, I'm one of those guys that, you know, I retired from the system. I mean, I have a private consultation thing now and whatever, and it's great, and I enjoy that, but make no mistake about it, it's just so good to see people able to start in law enforcement, leave, land on their feet, thrive, and be very successful, and more importantly, very happy family, happy kids, get to be part of your kids' lives. Yeah, you're busy. Yeah, you get called away, but it sounds like it's a more family-friendly venue, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can do it. It can happen.
Yeah, man, it sure can. So, well, folks, there it is, man. Another fantastic episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. Again, you can see this live. We'll have the MP4 on the LA Talk Radio site. Of course, Matt will get you a copy of it. I'll send it through your I'll send you the link to download the MP4 through your LinkedIn DM. Perfect. And folks, this will be available on Apple Podcasts. It's available on Amazon Audible. It's available on iHeartMedia, man. This is the little podcast that could, and it's great guests like Matthew Frazier that make this the podcast it is, man. Well, everybody have a blessed week. Stay safe out there, and we'll see you next time on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Matt, thanks, brother. Thanks for coming in. I'll be in touch.
Thanks.
We'll see you at the
Quick Trip. Anytime. Thanks, Bruce. Yes, sir.
All right, man. Take care.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz only.